Welcome to Finding Your Identity, the podcast about helping you find your identity. Welcome back to Finding Your Identity. This is episode 31, and I'm recording this from 2020. So we made it past New Year's without any kind of end of the world event. And everybody said it was going to happen. Actually, I don't think anybody said it was going to happen. But, you know, there's people who think or wish that the end of the world would come. And I don't think it's quite there yet. And I'll tell you why. It's quite in part due to conservation. Oh, yeah. What a segue, right? But I'm going to talk about conservation in this episode, and you know, it's a good cause for many reasons, and I think it's worth having a conversation about, you know, one way my mouth to your ear conversation about it. Because if we didn't have it, if we didn't have that mindset, then I think we'd be in trouble. Because if we were just selfishly continuing practices that, you know, were very much in effect prior to major conservation efforts, then we might have actually died off or something, you know, because it might have just escalated and snowballed. You know, if we consider, you might have found that, like, all the trees were chopped down and all the animals were killed and all the plants died. And then you've got an interstellar situation. And, you know, last I saw, Matthew McConaughey was sitting in the back of his Lincoln Aviator, you know, waiting for his ice fish to come up and signal that they were ready to be taken and killed and eaten. So I don't think we've got anybody to fly into the future or the past, or both at the same time, simultaneously, in a weird cubed library type scenario, talking to his past while affecting his future. But that, you know, that's kind of the plot of Interstellar, if you didn't pick up on it, and Matthew McConaughey was in Interstellar. But bottom line is, we don't know what the events would have been if we didn't start thinking this way. You know, and obviously climate change is a big topic, but I don't necessarily want to have a discussion about that, but I think kind of understanding conservation and why it kind of started and how it got started is important. So that's what this episode is going to be about today. Conservation is relatively new in terms of, I mean, not the efforts necessarily, but societies putting laws in place to effectively, you know, make it illegal to go against the practices of conservation from a couple different perspectives. But, you know, considering we're in 2020, we just wrapped up a decade, as I mentioned in the previous episode, ad nauseum. But, you know, the 2000s, right? So we're 20 years in, but we're only 20 years into 2000. And conservation, the conservation law or main law that was kind of passed for wildlife conservation was 1900. So 120 years, right? Considering the grand scheme of things for how long humans have been around, you know, that's not very long. That's only, you know, we only started in the past 120 years to kind of take things a little bit seriously. And then it's really in the last, maybe, I don't know, was probably the 80s. So let's say that's 40 years. It's only really in the last 40 years that we've seen some big changes in terms of, you know, helping the planet and not just junking it up. I remember when I was younger, you know, when I was teens, you know, 10 through 16 or 20 or whatever, but I can remember when I saw garbage all over the place, even in nice towns. And not to say there's anything wrong with the dirty towns. I mean, yeah, they're dirty. You know, lower income places just generally, I guess people just don't care as much. I mean, they just have nothing to really live for. They just throw their trash on the ground. I commute into Hartford, and you can see like almost like a line of when you go into the impoverished areas, because it's like clean, 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 street sweepers operate, and then, oh, street sweepers, no, they don't go past this line, no. And then there's just soda bottles and ho-ho and Twinkie wrappers and McDonald's wrappers, fast food wrappers, just garbage, lottery tickets, cigarette butts, just all over the side of the roads. You know, like, honestly, like, that bugs me, like, as you can probably tell in my voice, just because I don't think it should stop there. Not that we're going to be sending massive amounts of workers to go try to clean it up, but you almost need to. I remember going on a volunteer day, I guess is what you would call it, when I was working somewhere, and we went to this park in Hartford called Pope Park, where we actually did a day of service, where we basically kind of were like, all right, it's an army of workers. And there seemed to be like 100 of us from the Hartford there. And we all kind of pitched in. We just like grab a shovel, grab a rake, grab a wheelbarrow, whatever, you know, and they kind of put us wherever. And I was actually on a mulch duty. Yeah, that's right. I was on mulch duty. And at one point it was like, we were hauling mulch in a wheelbarrow to, fill in around trees. Then I was on dirt duty, where we had to go and fill in holes that were just all over the place. So we had to like level out ground, and you know, that was about 6 hours, maybe more like 4 hours, I think, of actual, you know, labor. And I used to do that. I worked on that farm. Like, I used to do that for a living, and it's hard work. It's kind of funny to see, you know, desk jockeys doing that kind of work and sweating and, you know, getting calluses. And it's also hilarious to see your CTO standing on the top of a mulch pile or a dirt pile or whatever it was, you know, digging that shovel in for a good 15 minutes to make himself feel good, while the reporter happened to be there taking pictures and writing notes, you know. But hey, whatever. You got to give, whether it's 15 minutes or 15 hours, like, service is service, you know, like, you got to help pitch in. But anyway, so conservation, I said it started in the 19th century. And, you know, it was really the Lacey Act that was passed in 1900. It was the first act that actually was passed to protect wildlife. And it was kind of a big step in the right direction, because I think it was recognized. And the sad story is like the story of the bison in the plains that were nearly wiped out until conservation efforts were put in place. And, you know, it was really just trappers and hunters, you know, they were hunting, fur hunters that were hunting them for their fur and for their meat, but just over hunting and just, you know, obliterating the population. And, you know, it was really sad, and things needed to be done. And it was really, you know, it was figures in history, like, you know, Teddy Roosevelt was a pretty big supporter, you know, Theodore Teddy Bear Roosevelt. Which I think, if I'm not mistaken, the teddy bear is actually was created because of Teddy Roosevelt. For some reason, that little fact sticks in my mind. I could be entirely wrong, but I like to think that that's the history of the teddy bear. And I think there's a place in Vermont, which I think is called the Vermont Teddy Bear Company, that might hold the answer, and Google, but I just don't feel like looking it up on Google right now. So we're going to say that the teddy bear was because of Teddy Roosevelt. And I actually think that's true because of the hat too, because, you know, he was a conservationist. He loved like the wild and going out there. And I think he wore like a safari hat or something like Teddy Roosevelt. I don't know. that kind of sticks in my head. I know he was a big proponent of getting national parks established too, and he definitely was a big supporter. And you know, I guess what's kind of like cool about that is, you know, like he was a president and he had the power to actually do stuff, you know. And so, you know, he kind of, I think, helped create you know, a foundation that essentially helped, you know, spark things for in the future. Because, you know, he actually was the founder of a club called Boone and Crockett, which was a conservationist club, you know, that essentially was helping to establish conservation lands. And, you know, it just really, it kind of laid that foundation. It was also, you know, I think a big factor in the national park system that was created. You know, essentially because he, you know, set out to establish the, you know, the state, the United States Forestry Service. And so that obviously was something that needed to be established in order to, you know, continue that conservation effort. And, you know, while doing that, that established 150 national forests and, you know, 51 federal bird reserves and 4 national game preserves, 5 national parks and 18 national monuments. And, you know, this was all part of the 1906 American Antiquities Act. So, you know, straight from the sources of the Wikipedia. But, yeah, so that was something that, you know, he was a big proponent of. You know, he didn't actually create the first national park, which was Yellowstone, or the second, which was the Yosemite, but he definitely you know, helped establish that United States Forestry Service. So I'm going to pause for a second because I'm kind of jumping all over the place here, but you know, what started, you know, with the National Park Service, and this is, I think, important to conservation, was, you know, in 1872, you had Ulysses S. Grant, you know, yeah, that one, the famous one, you know, from the Civil War. You know, he's the one who actually established Yellowstone as the first national park in the United States. Now, so that was 1872. And then Yosemite in 1890. Now, in you know, so in 1900, President McKinley, who spelled his name wrong, my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, really just didn't know how to spell McKinney. He must have spelled it McKinley. No, I'm just kidding. He's not actually a relative, but it's close enough, right? McKinney. So anyways, President William McKinney was the one who actually signed the law, the Lacey Act, into law, and that was the act that helped establish that first law for protecting wildlife, first conservation act. And, you know, it made it illegal to improperly import or export, purchase, whatever, you know, wild animals. It also included plants and plant products. Later, which much, much later, because I think it was like 2008, it actually was extended to cover certain types of wood, like you know, wood that's endangered, like from trees that are endangered, you know. And incidentally, there was actually something that happened with Gibson Guitar Company, where they actually got into trouble with the federal government because they were accused of using like Madagascar wood or something like that for, you know, using it to produce their guitars. And, you know, that was obviously a big deal because that was a federal crime because of the Lacey Act. But so that was 1900. President Teddy Roosevelt took office in 1901. He's from 01 to 06. Yeah. So 01 to 06. So when he was in office, that's when he established, you know, the U.S. Forestry Service and established national parks and all those ones that I listed, 150 blah, blah, blahs, you know, all the ones I just mentioned before, all those different, you know, landmarks and national parks and game preserves. So there's that period of time, basically, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s, where all this kind of is taking place. And that was all in an effort to, you know, promote and preserve, which, you know, I used to work for the National Shooting Sports Foundation, and, you know, their motto was protect, preserve, and promote, I think. That was a few years ago, but I think that's what it was. And I always thought that was just a great, you know, tagline for a company, because they wanted to promote safety with guns, and they wanted to preserve, you know, wild game, preserve the proper practices for hunting and, you know, collecting game or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, it's an important thing. So I think it's, and a lot of companies kind of take that on. And like I said, like, you know, I worked for a big company that was pretty big in making sure, you know, they got the word out that there were opportunities to volunteer. Even where I'm currently working, you know, it's the same way, where, you know, you get, like, you can log your hours, and it's encouraged to log your volunteer hours or your donations, you know, to the different charities. And let me tell you, there is no shortage of opportunities to donate, because, you know, it's everywhere. Blood drives, you know, like, you know, kind of pass the hat collections for local charities, or, you know, whatever. Like, sometimes it's like, I think, where I work is, has a calendar, and you buy the calendar, and it helps support charity, you know, and there's stuff that's like goes directly back to the community or whatever. But, you know, essentially I think that, it's just important to kind of take on that mindset to think conservation, to think preservation of where we live. And, you know, I don't think it needs to be a battle. It's a political battle to, you know, debate what climate change is or whatever. And then you got the Greta girl who comes over on a plastic boat. No, not plastic. Forgive me. You know, Madagascar wooden boat. Oh, no, wait, no, that would be bad too. Whatever kind of boat, you know, I'm sure like a paper mache boat or whatever kind of boat she came across the ocean on, you know, to yell at everybody about her having to come across the ocean on a boat, and say that she shouldn't have had to do that because it's our fault, you know. But, like, here's the thing. Like, you never are going to get people to do things because you yell at them. Like, I mean, if it's not obvious, most of the time you're growing up, you're just not – you're doing the opposite of whatever someone's yelling at you to do, you know, just the nature of humans. It's more about promoting the benefits of it in terms of right now, like, I don't want to drive down the street and see garbage on the sides of the road. So – I'll put my trash in a proper place, in a proper receptacle, you know, try to recycle when I can and when the options are available. These days, it seems, you know, there's costs associated with recycling a pizza box. Like, you can't recycle a pizza box unless there's not a trace of food on it, because it can't properly be recycled. And so, you know, I guess entire loads of recycling are getting tossed away, you know, or thrown into regular garbage and unable to be recycled by the trash companies because people throw away pizza boxes, you know. But it's like, the thought is it's cardboard. Oh, you know, and if I, you know, honestly, like, I don't, we, like, my house, we burn them in the fireplace because they're good kindling, and, you know, they make for a nice booming hot, you know, hot fire that just kind of hits your face for a second and then dissipates, you know. So that's our way of recycling it. I guess we're creating pollutants in the air, though. I don't even know. It's hard to keep track of this stuff. But, you know, it's better than sticking it in the garbage, in my opinion. Although the garbage companies are just, I think, burning stuff off anyways. But I just don't think we have a good system to support recycling. In other words, you know, we try to save all the bottles, you know, and then Then you got to go bring them somewhere, and you got to stick them in the machines, and they spin around and spit you out a nickel or whatever. And a lot of times the machines don't work properly, so you end up with like a quarter of your bag of bottles that you saved and tried to recycle that you have to throw in the garbage anyways because the machines won't take them because the labels are torn. I don't even know, because they can't scan them and they can't attribute, you know, the store that it came from, so they can get their environmental credits. Like, I'm not entirely sure, like, why the system is set up the way it is, but we, as individuals, aside from the corporations, can make a difference. You know, you can volunteer. My, you know, father and stepmother live in Florida, and they help support, a good cause, which is the Bear Creek Feline Center, which is a wildlife preserve for big cats, cougars and bobcats, which are really cool animals. And, you know, it was kind of, on my list to talk about something that had to do with not necessarily conservation. I wanted to talk about charity or volunteer work, but kind of, you know, got the idea because, it's good to get the word out about conservation. And so, you know, this episode is kind of blooming from that, to get the word out about certain things. Like I said, that Bear Creek Feline Center, which is in Florida, I think it's in Panama City. I actually am not entirely sure the exact location. It's near Panama City, but you can look up Bear Creek Feline Center. But it's a great cause that's actually meaningful to my family, you know. And this will kind of sound like the little commercial bit that's inserted in my podcast for the supporting shelters, because it's in the same vein, you know. Because I have a shelter dog, my family. We rescued her, and it's a great cause. And, you know, so this will sound like that, but that's a charitable ad. I don't get many money for it. You know, I just think it's a good message to promote. Same thing with talking about, you know, supporting a wildlife preserve. There may not necessarily be one near you. You can always help by donating to like a place like the Bear Creek Big Cat, Feline Center, or Bear Creek Feline Center. You know, and there's other ways that you can throw support by just getting the word out to other people to help support it. But, you know, there's other local charities. You could donate at a local conservation effort near you. There's definitely plenty around. I mean, there's I know one right up the road from us is conservation land, although I don't entirely know how to donate to it, but I definitely use it and we keep it clean, and I feel like we were using it for the use it was intended. And, you know, about halfway through the 1.5 mile trail, you can stop and write a note to other people, which is kind of neat. And, you know, you get to, like, some people write poems or some people write prose or whatever, haiku, or just a couple words like, Johnny was here in the middle of the woods on this day and my dog drank some water. Yeehaw. But, you know, I just think I love to go out and I love to hike. I love to enjoy nature. I think that there's something refreshing about it, especially when you're kind of unplugged and you're not paying attention to screens and you're just out there. You know, the same thing if you're volunteering, like you could be going out to like a soup kitchen, you know, to help volunteer to feed the homeless. And like, you know, it's going to give you a good feeling. So maybe partially selfish, but you're definitely doing something good for other people and not thinking about yourselves, you know. And sometimes it's just, you just give a dollar to somebody who's on the street who really looks like they need help and they're not a beggar. There's definitely plenty of beggars on the streets of Hartford, which annoy me because they're out there every day. And I don't necessarily believe that they're in that much trouble or that they're not going to use it for drugs. And I have a hard time throwing them a dollar, but there's some people who are not begging, who are just sitting there, who just look cold, and you can give them a dollar. You know, I tried to offer somebody a bag of chips and they refused it, and I was like, what? How could you refuse the bag of chips? You're homeless or something, you're begging for money but you don't want a bag of chips. So now I see that guy and I just walk right past him because I'm just annoyed because I see him every day and it's like, you were too good for my bag of chips. You know, I know they weren't like Lay's potato chips. They were just Tostitos or, you know, tortilla chips, but whatever. My bag of chips was just as good as anyone else's bag of chips. That's all I'm saying. But I digress. And, you know, so I think it's important to just take care of this planet and take care of the things around you that can't take care of themselves. You know, I mean, you do it with children, like, and you try to, you know, at least, you know, raise them so they don't die and, you know, so that they can survive and then grow up to do good things too. You know, I mean, I don't think, like, you can't always be like 100% doing good things because you're like, I got to work. I mean, it's kind of a good thing because you're putting food on the table for somebody, but it's like, maybe it's not necessarily charity, you know, but it's like, I got to work. I got to pay the bills, you know, I got to pay the man. And that's kind of tough sometimes to balance that with then doing charity and saying, oh, I got to go spend an hour at the soup kitchen or, you know, like I need to give towards this goal of $1,000 for building, I don't know, something, some kind of, well, a dog park or something, which I don't know if that really fits into conservation, you know, but my town seems to think that was a big thing. Or spending, you know, or trying to raise $100,000 for new stadium lights for a stadium when it's kind of like you're pretty close to a city that's got a lot of homeless people. But we've got brand new lights. Yay! We can see the players in our, you know, entitled town. Oh, yeah, I guess I lost all the listeners that are going to be in this town because I'm sounding like a hater. I just think money gets wasted. I think it's crazy that I forgot what I was reading, but there's $1 billion or something like that sitting in a fund. Or no, there was $1 million. Yeah, there was $1 million sitting in a fund for some reason. And I can't remember. I can't even remember what to look up. But it was like this $1 million was offered to somebody who was like, I don't want your money, you know, because it was supposed to like appease this person or whatever. And so the money is sitting in government coffers and it's worth $1 billion now after interest. And it's just sitting there because, and I don't even know if the person's still alive that it was meant to go to, you know, but that person like denied it. Like they said, I don't want that money. I don't want your money. What the heck, man? Like, how are you going to have $1 billion sitting in the bank and like we're in crazy amounts of debt or there's homeless problems or you see signs for like the hunger problem in the United States and you got $1 billion sitting in the bank for somebody who said they didn't want it, but it was like allotted for them. Oh, it was Indians. That's what it was. Not somebody. It was the Indians. Yeah. It was like Indians in like Montana. That's what it was. I just remember. I think it was Montana or the Dakotas. No, maybe it was the Dakotas. It was like near the Black Hills. Yeah. Basically, there was an Indian nation who said, we don't want your money. And so that money is just sitting in an account. They refused the money. I'm sorry. You've had a long time to claim it and do what you could have done with it. The government shouldn't just be sitting there hanging on to it. Do something else good with it, you know, or be like, hey, listen, like Sioux tribe or whatever tribe it is, like, would you like, could we donate it in your honor? Like, I mean, it just seems nuts to me that there's $1 billion sitting in a bank account, just collecting interest. That is like, when is it ever going to go anywhere? Like, I mean, it's just sitting there where it's like, why couldn't that money be spent for helping people? Like, that just blows my mind. So that's what I got to say about conservation, which seems a little crazy. You know, that I guess they're conserving money, like they're saving money, but like literally they've saved the money in the savings account for 50 years or whatever. But it's important to consider how you can help others, I think is the big takeaway. And I just wanted to do an episode about that and, you know, did a little bit of digression, but that's my typical shtick that I like to stick to, you know. And I think it's going to be good because you're going to be enlightened and you're going to feel this need to go do charity work now, right? So get out there, save the world, save the planet, save things, people. Just save the good people. Don't let the bad people live, like, you know. Also, donate money to Australia because a whole bunch of animals are dying, and that's really sad. And koala bears are so cute and cuddly. I mean, not that kangaroos aren't kind of cute, but they'll punch you in the face with their feet. So that's a little alarming, but they still deserve to live. And it's crazy that everything's burning over there and nobody can stop it. And that's, you know, so it's another one of those things where you can help donate. I think there's a lot of different organizations, like charity organizations, that's the word I was looking for, that you can donate to. A lot of times it starts with like the American Red Cross, because they're going to help get supplies to people who have been affected. You know, I think the Wildlife Fund, WWF, which they stole back their rightful acronym, the World Wildlife Federation, stole it from the wrestling people, who are a bunch of, you know, crazy people who smash people with chairs and jump off of ladders and stuff. And it blows my mind that that's still around. The fake wrestling is still around. But anyways, World Wildlife Fund is a good place to donate money if you wanted to try to help out people in Australia. And you can put 50% towards that and 50% towards a cause in the United States, you know, like the Bear Creek Feline Center. And it's a shameless plug, but I think it's a good cause. And it's obviously something that, like, my family is involved in, so I'm going to push it because it's my podcast and I can do that. And it's the end of the podcast, so thank you for listening. This was Finding Your Identity. And, you know, we're rolling back into 2020, rolling back into some kind of rhythm. I think this has turned into an every other week thing, though, based on my schedule. So look for the next episode when it is available. You will get a notification if you subscribe, you know, through some podcast platform. Thanks again for listening. This is Finding Your Identity.